From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for June 19th, 2016. And a very, very happy Father's Day to all of you out there. It's time for our weekly review of politics from Washington to Springfield, with City Hall in between. Grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your day and week off to a good start. Well, again, happy Father's Day to everyone out there. I know Dave and Sam want to give their Father's Day wishes as well.
That's right. Happy Father's Day, Dad, and to you, Rick.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And Sam, you know, you after throwing your dad under the bus a couple of weeks ago.
Wait, what did I do? I forgot. Remind me.
I'm not going to remind you. That would be repeating the sin if I did that.
Happy Father's Day, Dad. I love you. We'll probably all see him at some point today. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm sure he's going to bring something to celebrate the holiday. But looking forward to having a nice break, because I'm doing the beat today, too, at 3 o'clock. So we're going to have a chance to go to lunch between my shift and then the show.
Oh, so. Very good. Very good. Yeah. And, you know, when I saw Sam the other day, I was up at Channel 9, and he was a guest on CLTV's sports feed. And I was subbing in to for Paul Lisnick on Hosting Politics Tonight. And I don't know. I thought we both looked kind of a little bit out of our element. Maybe me more so than you, Sam. But I will tell you, he was fabulously dressed. I mean, great tie.
I saw the tie.
Yeah, did you see the tie?
Yeah, I saw the tie.
I swear, I think it had every color that you can find in a box of 164 Crayola crayons.
Very commanding.
Yeah, I mean, very dapper, I will say.
I appreciate that.
But now, you said you did have to return it back to the rental place?
It was a seersucker coat, Schwanee. With the,
oh, really?
With the macaroni and cheese, firecracker red, and midnight blue tie with the charcoal
pants.
Well,
I saw the picture, and it was very striking. I'll put it that way.
Roger Badish, obviously cancer survivor, he challenged me to do it for Craig Sager. They call it Sager Strong, and it's for AML awareness, which is acute myeloid lymphoma. And he said that they're trying to raise awareness by wearing some zany stuff, and I said, of course. I will accept this challenge.
You did.
I didn't think it was zany. And, I mean, at least you didn't do the Craig Sager sport coat routine.
No. A little tamer. Barely, though.
But, you know, what a great thing that ESPN did, too, to have him do the courtside work on Game 6. Truly a great honor and respect for what he's been going through. And, and boy, that NBA playoffs. I'm not a big NBA fan, but this is really turning out to be something.
This is the one to watch. And for all that LeBron James, all the flack that he gets, he wanted to go home to Cleveland and bring a championship to that title drought-laden city, and he's one game away tonight, Game 7.
Was LeBron involved the other night with a player who got mad and ended up taking out his mouth guard and throwing it?
Yeah, LeBron had about 41 points. And I think that he rattled the Warriors. Steph Curry, the MVP, did not look very MVP-like. Tossed that mouthpiece. Actually hit the son of one of the minority owners of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And then he said that he was trying to hit it at one of the desks, a scoring position or something. I don't know. But he was trying to throw it at an official.
The best part, though, Rick, how about Steph Curry's wife tweeting out after the game that the NBA is rigged? Did she not think about that? Because her husband is the two-time reigning MVP.
Exactly.
So if the NBA is rigged and he's the reigning MVP, what does that mean?
And also, I don't know that Steph Curry ever fouled out before until that game in an NBA playoff game.
I don't think he did.
And so that was the first one. And, in fact, I remember he had three fouls at the half. And even the sports analysts were saying, well, he's never fouled out in a playoff game, so don't worry about it. So obviously he was feeling the heat, the pressure of LeBron and Cleveland. And but what a game this is going to be! I mean, it's well worth it. And as I said, I'm not a big NBA fan, but I'm really looking forward to this. Certainly more than watching Shields pitch for the White Sox anytime soon.
Only 8 earned runs last night.
Isn't that? It's just amazing.
That's it. He didn't make it out of the second inning.
The folks at Channel 9 posted this thing where they took Shields' last 4 starts and Arrieta's last 32, and they each have the same number of earned runs allowed in that time period. 31, I think, is the total. I mean, his ERA, I think, is Shields' ERA is over 25.
21.81.
Oh, I mean... And Shields only makes how much more than Jake does?
He makes a little bit more money. But now, for people wondering what ERA is, 21.81, that's the average amount of runs he would give up every 9 innings. So almost 22 runs every 9 innings.
Which is why he hasn't made it out of the second inning yet.
That is not good.
In any of his starts. So, yeah, but how about the Jake? I mean, he's doing it again. Just – And even that the grandpa hitting the home run, the game-winning home run last night for the Cubs, I mean, unbelievable. 46-20. I mean, this is just it's scary good how they're playing. It really is.
That's a good way of putting it, actually.
Yeah. Well,
scary good.
And I'll be tempered about my remarks about that. Also, Dave, I want to point out our award winner won an award from the Illinois Broadcasters Association.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you
for his special on Pullman.
The one last year. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And I know that you've already, in a way, kind of had Father's Day with your dad because of the road trips that you took as part of Dave's work on the special series that he did on the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service System, which, by the way, the president commemorated in
over
Yosemite
the weekend.
Yesterday.
He was at Yosemite, yeah, right. But, quite the place to be, actually.
And I will tell you, you know, there's so much stagecraft that goes on for these presidential visits and stuff. And when you looked at the backdrop at Yosemite with the waterfall there, I mean, you couldn't have had a better backdrop for any kind of a speech.
You know, the picture may have been set up, but the backdrop cannot be duplicated. That is one of the great places and most beautiful places in the world. And I recommend that to anybody that should visit Yosemite or Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, just once, just to just be overwhelmed by it. It's just fantastic.
I've never done Yosemite, but I did the Grand Canyon once. Mm-hmm. And it just, I mean, it takes your breath away.
It does. It does. And you just stand there and gaze at it. I could tell stories all morning, and you've got a show to do, but you're absolutely right. Those great places out there, and, you know, again, we wanted to call attention to the great places we have in the Midwest on this, but those places out west are just untoppable.
Yeah, you think of truly like the Midwest, and then you get out to where all this great scenery, and it's just fantastic, just fantastic. Well, another busy week in Chicago, always lots of tourists. I want to give my personal thanks to the city's street crews for deciding yesterday to make both State Street and Michigan Avenue in the Loop a one-lane street going northbound on Saturday afternoon. That made it very interesting for the commute.
Did you have anybody ask you where the water was?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet, although I did have somebody last week point to Trump Tower and ask me if that was Sears Tower.
Oh,
so I only give them a half a demerit because they said Sears Tower instead of Willis Tower.
They did. You're right. They said Sears, not Willis.
Right. But yeah, so I pointed them in the direction of the river and just said, just follow it along.
My favorite tourists are the ones that ask where the ocean is.
Right.
The ocean?
Which way is the ocean?
I haven't gotten the ocean. I've gotten the water, but not the ocean.
Which way is the ocean? And which way I just point and just like, over there. Just keep walking.
You don't even ask which ocean?
No.
No. You just, well, that's why I love, and Dave knows the story about the tourist asking which way to the water.
The water, yeah.
And is it, well, there's the river.
You want
over
the
here,
river or you want Lake Michigan? Yeah. You know,
pick your water. tourist time in Chicago, always an adventure.
No, I have to say, I like it. I want to help people with, you know, they ask the questions and you think, well, what do you mean, the water? But I want them to go home and I want them to tell their friends that they had a nice experience in Chicago and that there were courteous people that helped them.
Oh, I'm never rude.
No.
I mean, I certainly try to be helpful. I may grumble about it later.
Grumble about it later, right. Tell stories at the goat about that. Well, did you hear what I heard the other day?
Yeah, but see, you can't tell those stories at the goat because that's tourist time for them, too.
Definitely
so
is.
It's tourists everywhere in Chicago. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. Producer Jasmine is back, a master's graduate, Jasmine, and she'll be fielding your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin and on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is making sure that Michigan Avenue stays open in front of Tribune Tower. So that the traffic can get through. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes. Just search for Rick Pearson. Coming up, we've got another great show today. Joining us after Dave's 7:30 news update is Martin Luby, an associate professor at DePaul, part of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. We'll talk about the state's bond sale last week and how much that really cost the taxpayers. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll be speaking to my good friend Brian Bernardoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. And we'll be talking property taxes. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by another good friend, Don Schaefer. Don is Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association, and we'll be talking about the Springfield stalemate and its effect on road and bridge construction this summer. That's all coming up. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin, 7:22 on this very beautiful Father's Day. Please get out and enjoy it. It's going to be hot. It's going to be around 90, but you couldn't ask for a nicer Sunday morning in Chicago. Well, it's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and I don't know about you, but it's hard to believe that it was a week ago about this time that we were getting these reports of a shooting at an Orlando, Florida nightclub and how those reports expanded to the fact of the tragic gun violence of one person led to 49 deaths and 53 people being wounded. It was that gun violence in Orlando and the political response that certainly dominated the week, beginning with presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump using the incident to double down on his call to ban Muslims and expand it even further.
When I'm elected, I will suspend immigration from areas of the world where there is a proven history of terrorism against the United States, Europe, or our allies, until we fully understand how to end these threats. After a full... Thank you. And by the way, we have no choice. After a full, impartial, and long overdue security assessment, we will develop a responsible immigration policy that serves the interests and values of America.
Now, Trump also continued his harsh criticism of U.S. immigration policy and sought to link it to a populist theme that immigrants were the reason for stagnant wages in the U.S., even though studies have shown that's really not the case.
And we continue to admit millions more with no real checks or scrutiny. Not surprisingly, wages for our workers haven't budged in almost 20 years. You wonder why we get the crowds. You wonder why we get this tremendous support. You wonder why I've gotten more votes than any Republican in any primary in the history of the Republican Party. Take a look at that. Take a look at your security, but take a look at the wages. For 18 years, they've been stagnant. They've even gone down. So whether it's a matter of national security or financial security, we can't afford to keep on going like this, cannot afford it.
Now, on the Democratic side, presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton went after Trump in seeking what she called a worthy debate on how to keep America safe.
Americans, we don't need conspiracy theories and pathological self-congratulations. We need leadership, common sense, and concrete plans because we are facing a brutal enemy. In the Middle East, ISIS is attempting a genocide of religious and ethnic minorities. They're slaughtering Muslims who refuse to accept their medieval ways. They are beheading civilians, including executing LGBT people, murdering Americans and Europeans, enslaving, torturing, and raping women and girls. The barbarity we face from radical jihadists is profound. So I would like to have a worthy debate on the best way to keep our country safe.
Now, in her national security speech, Clinton restated what will be a continual theme of the campaign, that Donald Trump's words are little more than an ISIS recruiting tool.
Trump's words will be, in fact, they already are, a recruiting tool for ISIS to help them increase its ranks of people willing to do what we saw in Orlando. And fourth, he's turning Americans against Americans, which is exactly what ISIS wants.
That's former Secretary of State and presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. We'll continue with more of our national spin through politics throughout the show. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we've got assistant professor from the School of Public Service at DePaul University, Martin Luby. Marty is also a visiting senior fellow from the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And we'll be talking to Marty about the sale on Thursday of $550 million in bonds by the state of Illinois, and really what the true cost is to taxpayers as a result of the state's poor credit rating. Following that, we'll have Brian Bernardoni, my friend from the Chicago Association of Realtors, and we'll close out the show with another good friend, Don Schaefer, Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Happy Father's Day. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday. It was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and I think the grill will be fired up today. There's no doubt about it. I think this is a good steak day. It will be in great contrast to my daughter Amanda taking me to Girl and the Goat yesterday as a Father's Day treat, which lived up to all the hype, I will just tell you that. But, of course, as she quickly pointed out, it took her 3 months to get the reservations. So that was her treat, was getting the reservations. I had to pay. No, not really. We split the bill. That was fair. That was all fine. Well, continuing our weekly spin through national politics, it wouldn't be complete. A week wouldn't be complete without Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan being forced to once again repudiate the comments of the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump.
I think there's a really important distinction that every American needs to keep in mind. This is a war with radical Islam. It's not a war with Islam. Muslims are our partners. The vast, vast majority of Muslims in this country and around the world are moderate. They're peaceful. They're tolerant. And so they're among our best allies, among our best resources in this fight against radical Islamic terrorism. I do not think a Muslim ban is in our country's interest. I do not think it is reflective of our principles, not just as a party, but as a country. And I think the smarter way to go in all respects is to have a security test and not a religious test.
And an angry President Obama also took after Trump. Expect to hear of that a lot more as we get closer to the true fall campaign season. Obama responded to Republican criticism that he doesn't use the term, quote, radical Islamists, unquote.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticized this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. That's the key, they tell us. We can't beat ISIL unless we call them radical Islamists. What exactly would using this label accomplish? What exactly would it change? Would it make ISIL less committed to trying to kill Americans? Would it bring in more allies? Is there a military strategy that is served by this? The answer is none of the above. Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction.
And that's President Obama. Well, we're going to move the politics here closer to home. The state of Illinois last week borrowing on Thursday $550 million for construction projects. And I always like to call in my friend Martin Luby, assistant professor from the School of Public Service at DePaul University and a visiting senior fellow at the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And Marty does a great job of analyzing the state bond sales and kind of getting to the thrust of what it really costs us as a state. Marty, thanks for joining me this morning. Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, happy Father's Day to you too, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Now, I kind of liked when you looked at the state's June or January bond sale, and it was Illinois still in the penalty box. And, you know, this penalty is lasting a lot longer than 2 minutes for high sticking.
Yeah, the Illinois has been in the penalty box for quite a bit of time here, that's for sure. They continue to be in the penalty box, even if you just compare this latest sale Thursday. And you mentioned $550 million in bonds compared to the January sale. But at IGPA, at the Institute for Government and Public Affairs, we basically did an analysis this week, looked at two kind of comparatives. One, if the state of Illinois would have sold bonds 10 years ago when it was a relatively highly rated bond issuer, AA, and then what would the state have received in their bond sale if they would have sold it at relative prices only less than 6 months ago in their January sale. And that's really kind of the relative analysis that that we talked about and that we provided in this debate.
Now, I want to jump in here because when the governor's office announced the actual bond sale on Thursday, they hailed the fact that it was a 3.74% interest rate, which was the lowest in history for similarly situated general obligation bonds. The governor's spokeswoman saying that it was clear from today's bond sale that investors realize Illinois now has a governor that is trying to turn the state around and right its fiscal ship. Well, that 3.74, yeah, low. But Professor Luby, you did the analysis.
Yeah, I mean, they're correct in the sense that it was a low interest rate, but it would be a low interest rate for anybody to sell debt into this market. The municipal bond market were at historical lows.
Why is that?
There's a lot of demand for municipal bonds because of their security, generally speaking, and there's not a lot of supply out there in the market. For a lot of reasons. Some state and local governments just don't want to issue any more debt given their kind of fiscal stress and their fiscal health. So there's a lot of buyers chasing not a lot of bonds. So that's driving down prices. But it's also we're in a historically low interest rate environment for all borrowing products, whether it's houses or cars or treasury securities. This is a time where debt is really, really cheap.
And even though it came at a low interest rate, the fact of the matter is we're still paying a penalty.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, so again, on an absolute level basis, the governor's office and the governor is correct. It was a really great rate. It was a very low rate for a long-term financing. But what our analysis shows is that if the state would have sold these bonds at the relative prices that it received 10 years ago or even 6 months ago, they would have received a lot more money from the sale. And the specific numbers are If they would have sold these bonds at their ratings, their credit ratings 10 years ago, they would have raised $70 million more for this bond sale. If they would have sold them just at the relative prices less than 6 months ago, the relative prices that they received on their bonds in January, they would have received an additional $12 million from the sale. So effectively, the $70 million and the $12 million, depending on how far you want to kind of go back, is really the cost to taxpayers for the state's financial condition deteriorating over those time periods.
So, and of course, in I believe in January, when the state issued $480 million in general obligation bonds, the state then in January had just gone through some recent credit rating downgrades. Now you go to, you know, fast forward here to June, and, you know, here we are again with Moody's S&P downgrades that bring us very close to junk bond status in this state.
Yeah, that's correct. So this is another round of downgrades that happened over the last couple of weeks. There also was a lot of chatter in the municipal bond market from some investors that Illinois should be penalized to the extent that people just shouldn't show up for the bond sale. There shouldn't be any investors for it because of the deteriorating credit. That was not the case. There was investors did show up. The state, you know, got a good rate on an absolute basis, but it could have done better, of course, as I mentioned. But there's no doubt that that the state did pay a penalty. The penalty wasn't so severe that, you know, people just weren't showing up, that there people weren't going to buy the bonds. But nevertheless, there was a penalty in the sense that the state paid a lot more than it should have compared to its credit ratings from in the past.
You know, and I had heard some of that chatter, too, from some of these bond buyers that Illinois should be paying a penalty for the fiscal mismanagement, for the lack of a state budget. But it also just shows how you can't really control the market.
Yeah, you can't. And there's three really structural factors for why these investors show up. So, I mean, people ask, well, why? I mean, given the fact that Illinois is the lowest credit rated issuer in the country, it's near junk bond status, people often ask, why do investors buy these bonds? And there's three reasons why. Number one, the way the state structures their general obligation bonds, bondholders essentially are paid first, so they have priority of payment. So it's a strong credit from the perspective of investors.
So I'm sorry, Marty, but everybody should remember that is that, you know, if the state could go bankrupt or whatever, you know, before anybody gets any money, it's the bondholders get the money.
Correct. That's where they are in kind of on the priority of payment. So that's from an investor's perspective, they like that. You know, they view that as a strong credit, and it reduces the risk of further financial deterioration of the state. So that's one fundamental structural reason. The other was what I mentioned before. There just isn't a lot of municipal bonds out there. So there's a lot of investors who want to invest in relatively safe investments. So you got a lot of buyers in the market. And then three, because of this historically low interest rate environment, there isn't a lot of bonds that pay, you know, relatively high interest rates, what we would call high yield bonds. The state of Illinois is one of those issuers that do that. So high yield investors are very attracted to state of Illinois debt because instead of paying, say, 2% or getting a 2% return like they would if they would have bought state of Minnesota or state of Maryland bonds, they get 4.11% on the long bond. That's what the long bond for the state issued this time. They get 4.11% from the state of Illinois. So that's a big, big increase in return.
Double the going rate.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Marty Luby, assistant professor from the School of Public Service in DePaul University, visiting senior fellow at the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. :49 on this Father's Day Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with your Sunday Spin. And joining me on the phone is Martin Luby, associate professor in the School of Public Service at DePaul University. We're talking about Thursday's bond sale by the state of Illinois, $550 million for capital construction projects, and the fact that while the state got a good deal on the interest rate, 3.74%, the fact of the matter is that was also a penalty interest rate because of Illinois' poor fiscal management. And, you know, Marty, if you look at how we got that rate, and as you talked about the market conditions and things like that, does it even matter if Illinois were to go into junk status as a for a credit rating?
Well, I mean, if they were downgraded further, there'd be a greater penalty. The question would be, would there be investors that would show up?
Right.
And I don't have a crystal ball on that, but my sense is, you know, for the foreseeable future, I think the state is going to continue to have market access. So there's still going to be investors buying their bonds. Now, when market access is completely restricted, you know, that's a good question. I mean, let's think back to Chicago Public Schools. Chicago Public Schools have a worse rating than the state of Illinois, and they've been able to successfully sell bonds over the last year. However, they paid a huge penalty. Their last sale, they made, I think it was roughly in the mid-8s that they paid as an interest rate. So they paid a large, large market penalty for their debt. So I think that, you know, the state is going to continue to have access, but they, if the condition, if their financial condition deteriorates further, it's just the penalty is going to grow.
And the fact is that when you look at the state's fiscal condition, the backlog of bills, the pension debt, we are going to just have to borrowing has to be part of the solution.
Well, borrowing is going to be part of the solution of making sure that the state is fiscally sound from an infrastructure perspective, certainly going forward. The state is going to need to have access to the capital markets to deal with its deteriorating infrastructure problems. And they're going to need to sell a lot more than $550 million in bonds every 6 months. It's going to be in the billions. And as this penalty continues or maintains the same level, that's going to cost the state a lot more money than it should. And it's going to reduce their ability to deal with their infrastructure problem. As far as backlog bills, yeah, there's lots of plans oftentimes to borrow to deal with them, and the state has done that in the past. So to the extent that the state needs to access the capital markets and needs to borrow money to deal with their backlog bills, this penalty is going to hurt the state, and it's going to make it more costly to deal with those problems.
Well, and one of the ironies too in this bond sale, and we'll talk more later about this too with my friend Don Schaefer from the Midwest Truckers Association, is the fact that $550 million for infrastructure, largely for infrastructure, but at the same time, most of that money can't be spent because the legislature hasn't appropriated the spending authority for that money.
Yeah, that's the challenge. The irony is that the state is going to be able to pay back bondholders because that's done through a continuing appropriation, but they need new appropriations or reappropriations to deal with the spending of the bond proceeds. That is a challenge to the extent that there isn't a bunch in place. This money is basically the state is paying interest on this money, and they're investing, the proceeds are being invested, but they're being invested at a very low interest rate. So, there's a loss there as well. And the biggest loss is just that they can't deploy these bond proceeds for their use, which is to build infrastructure.
And as you point out, too, is that there will be a continued need and a greater need for infrastructure repairs if and when we ever get this budget matter situated. Hopefully that might have a positive effect on the credit rating. We did see, for example, Cook County, I believe, their credit rating actually went up with the reimposition of that that sales tax increase, but that was a net positive viewed by the credit rating authorities. But the more money we pay for bottom line, the more money we pay in interest costs is less money that can be used for human services, is less money that can be even applied to a future bond sale.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, every additional dollar that you pay in debt service and interest reduces what you can buy in infrastructure in the future. There's no doubt about that. And the other thing I did want to mention is, people ask, why is the state even borrowing money at this period of time? Well, interest rates are really low. So the irony is that the state could can't see its financial condition improve in the next couple of years, but they actually may have to borrow at a higher rate if interest rates increase compared to where they're at right now. So from that perspective, it made sense for the governor to borrow because of the historically low interest rate environment that we're in. And the shame is that he wasn't able to borrow even more and be able to deploy those resources for infrastructure. That's the challenge, because if we enter into a rising interest rate environment, even if the state of Illinois' credit improves, they effectively are going to pay more interest cost than they would have if they borrowed more today.
I mean, if all things were functioning on an even level in government, and I know that's kind of wishful thinking, but wouldn't this also be a good time to perhaps, you know, refinance some old debt?
Yes. They have done some refinancings over the years, but if the state of Illinois was able to borrow at rates like their competitor states, they'd be able to refinance even more of their debt probably at this point, which would create even more interest cost savings, which would allow for more money to be used for infrastructure. So that's correct. There's the missed opportunity, if you will, or the opportunity cost of not being able to refinance as much debt because of the financial condition penalty that you're carrying right now.
I know we don't know when the state would be likely to go back out on the bond market, but I would assume it follows this roughly 6-month schedule.
You know, they had not gone to the bond market for 2 years prior to the January sale. Historically, the state issues, you know, 2, 3, 4 bond issues per year. But because the state doesn't have a capital plan right now, it's the old one is expiring. I think that it's a little bit more lumpier when they go to the market. But once they have a capital plan, you could expect them to go to the market regularly, more frequently, and in larger size.
And traditionally, those capital plans also have a identified funding source, too.
Correct. And for Illinois, it's usually a new revenue source.
Right.
Because our capital plans are episodic and done every 5 years. So, in the last one, the 2000, I guess that's 2010, 11, somewhere in that period of time, video gaming was one of the primary revenue sources to pay for capital and then to repay debt service on capital improvement bonds. So when they do that, they're going to probably need to identify a new revenue source or an increase in an existing revenue source.
And that'll all be part of whatever grand bargain, if we ever see a grand bargain in this state to get us to a budget. Martin Luby, Assistant Professor, School of Public Service at DePaul University and Visiting Senior Fellow, University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Marty, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Appreciate it.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, Brian Bernadoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy at the Chicago Association of Realtors, will be talking about property taxes.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Going through the national spin again, we've got Donald Trump doubling down on his call for a ban on not only those of the Muslim faith, but also for people from any country suspected of any kind of terrorist activity against any of the allies of the United States or the U.S. And President Obama addressed that topic in Trump's renewed call for a ban on Muslim immigration.
We're starting to see where this kind of rhetoric and loose talk and sloppiness about who exactly we're fighting, where this can lead us. We now have proposals from the presumptive Republican nominee for President of the United States to bar all Muslims from immigrating to America. We hear language that singles out immigrants and suggests entire religious communities are complicit in violence. Where does this stop? The Orlando killer, one of the San Bernardino killers, the Fort Hood killer, they were all U.S. citizens. Are we going to start treating all Muslim Americans differently? Are we going to start subjecting them to special surveillance? Are we going to start discriminating against them because of their faith? We've heard these suggestions during the course of this campaign. Do Republican officials actually agree with this? Because that's not the America we want. It doesn't reflect our democratic ideals. It won't make us more safe. It will make us less safe.
That's President Obama talking about the Donald Trump campaign. Well, I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue on a bright and sunny Sunday morning here at Tribune Tower. And joining me on the phone on this Father's Day is one of the best fathers that I know, Brian Bernadone. Brian is the Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. Brian, thank you so much for joining me.
Rick, that's kind, and I'm thankful that he put me on a little later so I could watch all of Svengoolie last night.
Okay, now you got your Svengoolie remark in. Actually, what was the movie he was showing?
We had The Leech Woman last night, and I think if you think about things that leech onto you, I think the issue of property tax is one of those things that leeches onto me every time the bills come out.
Yeah, so it was a perfect way to prep for the morning show, leeches and property taxes. Well, I mean, truly, you're one of the guys that I think knows property taxes better than some of the property tax authorities that levy these things. And we had Cook County Clerk David Orr releasing the numbers last week for what people can expect coming up on their property tax bills. And as expected, Chicagoans are going to take a big hit in their property taxes, 12.8% increase in the average tax bill. But there again, it's all about proportion, isn't it?
Well, it's about proportion. You know, property taxes are a matter of public policy until the bills come out. And then it's a math problem. And to solve it, you really have to show the work. Did you vote? Did you attend governmental meetings? And most importantly, did you appeal? If you take a close look at what Clerk Orr put out, you know, you have to give Tony Preckwinkle some high points and the Cook County Board. They actually held the line on what's going on. But the news gets precipitously worse when you start taking a look down line on suburban ballots and clearly what's happening in Chicago. The concerns are significant in many regards, because when you think about what's going to happen with property taxes right now, higher taxes are a drain on economic development. And both Mayor Emanuel and President Preckwinkle have really tried to put economic development as a high priority. But in reality, the higher property taxes are a drain. They force businesses out or they force them to raise prices. It definitely raises rents. You know, I think in a time where we talk about housing affordability and in representing the 14,000 realtors we have in Chicago, you know, rents are an issue. It has a significant direct impact on those. But it also impacts escrows. And, you know, those who own condos are going to get a significant surprise when their banks call in asking for escrow increases, not only now, but what we believe to be a significant series of property tax increases over the next coming tax bills. I think your previous caller, boy, if you weren't depressed after listening to him, you're definitely going to get depressed hearing it from me that property taxes are going to continue to rise until the state gets its fiscal house in order, until the city of Chicago starts identifying some other ways to handle some of these complex issues they're dealing with. But if you're a homeowner or a small business owner, this is not a public policy issue anymore. This is a math question. You either have enough money or you're going to have to find the revenues to pay for it.
Well, and we talk about the impact on Chicago of, you know, what its financial problems are. But we're going to be seeing increases in property tax bills throughout the county.
There's no doubt. You know, I think one of the things that typically happens when these headlines come out is everyone seems to focus on the city of Chicago, but the suburban areas are going through their own reassessment right now. And, you know, Assessor Berrios has done his job. He's captured the market. That's what he's there to do. But we at the Chicago Association of Realtors have been really trying to focus less on the public policy aspect of it, but more on what the individual taxpayer's responsibility is to get their property values down, to lower their assessments. If you aren't taking those steps, if you aren't working with your township assessors, you're going to find that your assessment's going to be higher than your neighbor's, and as a direct result, you're going to pay higher taxes. So there's a real civic burden in this thing, and you know, I think we've been real focused on trying to educate folks, whether it's through community organizations, economic development groups across the city, but actually across the region as well, talking about the importance of appealing your taxes. And people who did follow our advice early on are hopefully seeing that the burden isn't hitting them. But those who haven't have to pray for hope from either Springfield or the mayor's office that some kind of rebates can take place. We don't like the idea of rebates. We think that it's just kicking the can down the road, but that they're going to feel that punch, and the punch is going to be solid. So we, again, encourage taxpayers within the Cook County listening area to really start taking a look at their tax bill, take a look at their assessment, and get involved in the process of knowing how to work with the township assessor, how to appeal their taxes, how to, if they need to go to the Board of Review to get the relief that they need. Because if you don't take those basic steps, the cost of government imposed on your house will continue to rise proportionally.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadone, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Happy Father's Day again to everybody. And we're speaking to my good friend, Brian Bernadone. And Brian is the senior, what's your title, Brian, over there? Senior Policy Director of Government Affairs, Public Policy, Chicago Association of Realtors.
Yeah,
and inveterate Sven Gulli fan.
Lobbyist and chief bottle washer.
There you go. There you go. So, you know, and you touched on some very important things before the break about, you know, if you're a homeowner, a property owner, you need to get involved. You need to, you know, go to village board meetings. You need to attend these government meetings, school board meetings. And when you look at, you know, out in the south suburbs, and you touched on this in kind of a Facebook note, you've got Bridgeview seeing a 10.33% increase, McCook property taxes up 27%, Summit up 11.5%, Willow Springs up 7.5%. I mean, those are sizable increases on an already big property tax bill in suburban Cook.
Yeah, these are working class neighborhoods. These are our neighborhoods that have long suffered from, in communities that have suffered from real economic development issues. We're bedroom communities that were really zoned for houses, but not industrial and commercial, with a few exceptions. They're really feeling the brunt of it. And I've often been amused when I hear, you know, so much of the attention going towards the presidential campaigns and the excitement. I get all that. But the people who are really fleecing you are your local electeds in many cases, who are doing things without a lot of knowledge, a lot of expertise, and a lot of understanding of how intertwined a bond sale is to the property tax rate. They look at it as a credit card in some cases. And the problem is someone's got to pay that bill, and it's going to be their next-door neighbor, or it's going to be that small business. I've often said that the price of a hot dog matters in Chicago. And it's not because I love hot dogs, even though it's ubiquitous to Chicago. It's the fact that it's a street food. And when property taxes go up, or when you start imposing, for example, sick days or minimum wage increases, all of those go into the final price that the consumer pays. And when the price of a hot dog gets too high, when the elasticity goes away and businesses close, you've got a problem in suburban Cook just like you do in Chicago at that level. Chicago, I grew up in, and I'm not that old, I'm 48 years old, was vibrant with lots of smaller mom-and-pop type businesses that essentially are getting forced out because of regulations. But really, when it comes down to it, the property tax issue. Land values are, the green sheets that get filed are what go into the assessor's algorithm that creates the assessment. I mean, that's kind of black and white. But when you start layering all the bond issues, all the different regulations, and it all starts turning into a tax rate, which the clerk puts out, that's where rubber hits the road. And I think we need to start looking at some fundamental changes about our absolute demands on property taxes, over reliance to pay for government. But until that solution is put into place, you really need to have a public engagement, at least at the bare minimum level, on their own property. And that's why we continue to advocate appealing your property taxes. You can get that assessment down, at least your exposure will not be as high as other folks.
Now, you had mentioned that the realtors in 2009 had done a program with the Board of Review. Is that something that's being considered again?
Yeah, we've had some conversations with a number of different folks. I can tell you that our realtors are very excited about being involved in that opportunity. Back in 2009, what we did along with the City of Chicago, Meyer Blank, and the mayor's office was something really unprecedented. The Board of Review had never opened their books once they close it. For those who are new to the issues of property tax, once the Board of Review closes their books, that pretty much sets up what the assessment base is, which then allows the local governments to apply their rate, and then the rates get finalized and get published. The Board of Review did something very unprecedented in 2009 when they opened up their books in direct relation to really what was going on with the whole mortgage fraud issue and the foreclosure issue. They opened up the books to allow for folks to to go through a reappeal of their assessment process. And because of the advocacy that the Realtor Association put forth, we were able to save some 30,000 folks their homes. I know that the Real Property Alliance, which is part of the Illinois Association of Realtors, and others are very much interested in us taking that program and doing it more often. I'm hoping that we'll be able to engage in doing that now. Lowering assessments is probably the most uniform thing that we can do, and uniformity is extraordinarily important in property taxes. By allowing everyone to appeal their assessment, it's a uniform process, and it's also a process, frankly, that doesn't matter on income. It just allows everyone to go through a process. So we're excited to do it. We're very happy about the achievements that we did about saving some 30,000 folks their home. The plan worked. We think we can do it again, and we're hoping and encourage that government may be listening to something like that.
Well, and, we hear at the state level the push for a property tax freeze. And, it sounds like, oh, well, of course, we should do that. But things are much more complicated. And as you point out, you have the whole issue of the state, its lack of a budget, and we have the controversy about the schools. And let's face it, a lot of the property tax bill is schools.
Well, your schools, I've always been focused on schools. Whether it's the Chicago Public School and their problems, but also your local school districts. Take a look at what superintendents are making. I think Illinois Policy puts out some amazing reports that talk about what superintendents are making. We don't have to look too far in the Chicagoland area to see what happens when you see those kind of things abused. Lincoln Way North is a great example. My oldest daughter just graduated from there, and she's the last graduating class in part because of the rampant spending that allegedly was going on in those areas. But you don't have to often look to other school districts. You can look to your own school district and take a look at what's going on. In my own school district, our superintendent's in the top 20 in pay. And when you start taking a look at those numbers and how they relate to areas of the city areas of the region where you've got working class homeowners that have to pay for these salaries, but also those pensions that go along with it, you should be involved. You should be concerned. But it really starts with your own property. The Cook County Assessor has a wonderful website that will allow you to find comps on it and take a look at what the valuations look like. And if you're sitting high, that's a great signal for you to appeal. And you don't need a tax professional at that level. You can appeal your own property taxes. When you go to the Board of Review, you need an attorney. But up until through that process, it's really your responsibility. If you're upset about taxes, take a look at your own house first. And then if you're still not happy, get out of your house and go to a school board meeting. And most importantly, get out and vote out the people that are raising your taxes, because until they're told otherwise, they're going to continue to do so, regardless of a property tax freeze or not.
You know, I'm getting this vision of something that would be out of one of those movies that Svengoolie shows, of everybody with the pitchforks and the But you're absolutely right. Get out, get involved, and vote. Brian Bernadone, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Hey, Rick, you're a great father yourself. Next time, I look forward to doing it in the studio. There's no better view than from Tribune Tower for this show.
Thank you so much. We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, my good friend Don Schaefer, Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association. We're going to talk about what the Springfield stalemate means as far as improving the state's deteriorating roads and bridges.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Happy Father's Day Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with your Sunday Spin. And joining me in the Allstate Showcase studio is Don Schaefer. He's Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association and another good dad.
Good. Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
Happy Father's Day to all those fathers out there, my dad out in Arlington Heights and everyone else.
It's a happy dad shout out day.
Today it is. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, indeed.
A lot of cookouts.
And a beautiful day for it. Well, I wanted to have Don on the show because there's an increasing concern among folks in the transportation industry as the budget impasse continues and continues and continues. And yeah, we all kind of gripe about summer being road construction season. But at the same time, we've had this continued deterioration of the state's infrastructure. It's a prime infrastructure. It's roads and bridges. And, you know, here we talked earlier this morning about a bond sale right. for infrastructure repair and that, and we don't even have an appropriation for most of that money. And you know, we're looking not only from the infrastructure aspect, but the job aspect as well.
We're looking at a drop-dead date, maybe is the best way to put it. You know, if we don't have an appropriation, in other words, if the General Assembly doesn't appropriate the money that's sitting there, projects could stop on July 1. There is a tremendous amount of road work going on right now around the state of Illinois. Roads, bridges, a lot of basic infrastructure that's funded by, you know, state, federal money. But the General Assembly has to appropriate that money for the new fiscal year, which starts July 1. They haven't done that yet. We're talking, approximately $2 billion in the next year for work around the state of Illinois, none of that work can start after July 1 because no one's decided how to spend that money yet.
But the issue, unlike some other areas of government, is not about, you know, where does the money come from or cuts or any of that nature. It's money that is being generated and exists.
You know, the money's there. That's just it. The pot of money is there. The problem is that the General Assembly has to take legislative action to move on it, and they haven't done that yet. And the real problem, you know, in terms of people saying, well, you know, why is this such a high priority? Well, like you said, Rick, it's not just the road work itself, but the tens of thousands of people in the state of Illinois who are employed, you know, on these road projects, on these infrastructure projects, anything from a sewer repair to repairing a bridge, a lot of new construction going on roadways and fixing up what's out there already. And that means, tens of thousands of jobs could be in jeopardy come July 1.
Yeah, I think the Transportation for Illinois Coalition
right.
Said that without by losing the construction season, it's an immediate loss of 25,000 jobs.
And that's direct jobs. That does not mean spinoff either, because then you have suppliers who supply all the the goods and services and the hard materials that are needed for that work. Everything, all the truck operators out there moving
truck tires, tires, and
moving rock, sand, and gravel and that type of thing. So the repercussions are major. And the real problem is that if in fact there is no money as of July 1, you just can't walk away from a project. You just say, well, let's just put down our tools and walk away. You've got to secure the site. You have to do all these different things to make sure that, you know, things are safe and secure. Now, some of the big companies will say, well, we can limp along for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, you know, because we got deep pockets. We know the state's going to pay us. But you got a lot of small suppliers. You've got a lot of minority business enterprises that, by law, have a stake in the whole game, and usually they're underfunded, or you know it's very tight. Well, they don't have the money to limp along for a couple of weeks. They're the ones that are going to be the quickest victims.
And I mean, in some respects, it's like every other vendor in the state of Illinois is that you're betting that something's going to get done and it's going to get resolved. And it's the state basically trying to take out a loan on these vendors. And a lot of them are on the margins.
Like we said, the last two segments, we're all waiting for Springfield. I mean, that's the best way to put it because, you know, a lot of different entities, a lot of different groups get caught up in the politics of Springfield. In this type of a situation, you know, the state infrastructure already has been deteriorating. We've kind of underfunded infrastructure repair and work over the last couple of years. You know, there's a lot of movement out there. They're saying, you know, just like bond sales, now is a wonderful time maybe to look at how you can fund road construction and repair. At the same time, we're going to see, hopefully, on the ballot in November, a constitutional amendment proposal that basically is what's called a lockbox amendment. What that means is that if the money that you pay for motor fuel taxes, registration on your car, all that money goes into the road fund. But what this constitutional amendment says, you got to spend it for infrastructure work. The problem right now is every year, you know, over $500 million a year is swept out of there. And it's used for non-highway construction, non-bridge repair work that will never come back. You know, the state's lost, or we shouldn't say the state, but the motoring public has lost $6 billion over the last decade in money.
Money being swept out of the road fund for non-highway purposes.
Right. It goes into that big black hole. But it never comes back out. Well, you know, it's not paying for pavement. It's not paying for anything that has anything at all to do, you know, with transportation. So this is going to be on the ballot in November, and it's going to be very important that people understand that voting for this constitutional amendment basically means truth in taxation. It means that the money you spend on gas taxes, the money you spend on your registration fee for your car, truck, vehicle, whatever, that money, it says it's going to not tie the hands, but it's going to force Springfield to use that money for one thing only.
The way it was supposed to.
The way,
it was intended to be.
And it's been very successful in Wisconsin and Missouri. They both passed similar constitutional amendments. And it really does make a difference because that is money that maybe forces the state not to have to look at alternatives where to get money.
Well, or forces them to look at other ways. If you're going to spend at certain X level, then come up with a way to do it.
Sure, and we always say our hands are not hands are tied, but times are tough and we don't have the money. Well, I mean, you're looking right now every year, you know, $500 million that, you know, that goodbye, it's gone. And this will preserve that money. And it's, like I said, truth in taxation.
And not Al Gore's lockbox.
Well, not the lockbox. But, I mean, that's a funny way to put it, but it's true. The money goes into a box, if you want to call it that. And it's safe and secure. So we're going to keep pushing.
We're speaking with Don Schaefer. He's Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm speaking with Don Schaefer, Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association, and we're talking about the very real prospect of not having a road construction season in this state. And while you might think as a motorist that's a good thing, when you look at the fact of how far behind the state is in doing its infrastructure repairs, it's one more sign of truly a crumbling state. I mean, that's how I view it.
And it's not getting any better. I think that some of the numbers that had come out, they had said a couple of years ago that, our roads were in really good condition. But in the last 4 or 5 years, I think Metropolitan Planning Council had said that we have gone from 89% in good roads down to, like 68%, I think it is. And so we're seeing this gradual drop in.
Well, it seems more than gradual. It's a, when you talk about that short of a time span,
sure.
I mean, that seems more as a precipitous one. And truly, if we're going to have this vaunted grand bargain dealing with the state budget anytime soon, to me, there always has to be a capital component. And part of it is the political, that if there's a little bit of pork and some ribbon cutting and that kind of thing, it makes the medicine go down easier for any kind of tax increase that's going to have to be done. So I assume, you guys are out there talking capital.
Sure, we're talking capital big time. I mean, I think that, from the trucking industry standpoint, I mean, we use the roads like everybody else. We beat them up like everybody else. We pay more taxes, but still, the economy depends on a good infrastructure. It depends on the trucks to be able to move stuff. It depends on people to be able to drive to work
and
those things.
This state is important as any when it comes to that kind of the road highway infrastructure.
And probably more than any other state in the country, because we are the crossroads for transportation between railroads, the trucking industry, the airlines, the barge lines, everything. We are the transportation hub of the country. No matter what they say in California, no matter what they say in Jersey, everything meets here in the middle, and that's how it works. And you got to have the infrastructure to support it. And right now it's tough because, we haven't, people don't want to talk about raising the motor fuel tax. We've gone 25 years since the last time we raised the motor fuel tax here in Illinois. We do not have by any means the highest motor fuel tax in the country. At the same time, we've got the state motor fuel tax hasn't been touched. The federal motor fuel tax hasn't been touched in just about the same amount of time. So, do we look at a motor fuel tax increase? Do we look at, no politician's going to vote to increase car registration fees. So that's off the table, especially on an election year. Senate President Cullerton talked about.
I wanted to ask you about this. And frankly, you and I had talked about this very issue a while back on this show about the, is the idea of a motor fuel tax kind of outdated because of the efficiency of cars and being able to go further on a gallon of gas? And then you bring in things like hybrids, you bring in things like Teslas and electric cars, which don't pay any kind of vehicle mileage tax except for their registration and license plate, about a true kind of a mileage-based tax. And we had Senator Cullerton bring up this subject and almost got booed off the table. And I've always, to me, it's about modernization and adapting to the way things are. And the reaction to Senate President Cullerton was overwhelmingly negative.
That didn't go over real well. I mean, to put it mildly, I mean, it was...
Oh, you're spinning for him now.
The vehicle mile tax is, it is a concept that should be looked at, but not on a statewide basis. A VMT is, as you said, it basically would be a tax, a mileage tax on your vehicle. Some say, you would report it on your income tax. You'd report it someplace, and sooner or later, you can cheat, but it'll catch up with you when you sell the car. But a VMT has to be looked at on a national basis. It won't work on a state-by-state basis because, cars go between states. If a state has it in one state and another one they don't, and do you trade off the motor fuel tax for a VMT? I mean, that's a real dilemma right now. I just don't think that... the time right now is right, unless it comes out of Washington. It's going to have to be a national issue to be discussed.
Well, look at how the debate went so long over a reauthorization of the highway bill. And did that topic even ever come up?
It did, but it kind of got pushed to the side. There just doesn't seem to be...
But everybody acknowledges the problem.
Sure.
That the tax does not adequately reflect society's needs and use of highways today.
And that's so true. But if you get a politician in Washington who proposes a new tax, then, you know, that's almost, you know, that's suicide. I mean, you know, so they're afraid to really, other than maybe study it and look at it, there's just a very small group out there that really seems to be a proponent for a VMT. And unfortunately, you know, they aren't even, but then we say, okay, how about stopgap? We have to do something then, a minimum motor fuel tax increase. You know, fuel prices have been down, an ideal situation. Ideal time to you know, add a small motor fuel tax increase to generate some extra money. And it didn't happen. And, you know, right now with the, you know, so close to an election, no politician's going to vote for a tax increase before November.
So when we look at like a capital bill, a construction road, what size are we looking at?
Well, the state,
based on needs.
Well, based on needs right now and based on reality.
Yeah.
You know, we have IDOT put out a 5-year plan that talks about basically spending about $11 billion plus over the next couple of years on projects that they deem realistically they can take care of. On the other hand, you have groups like MPC, the Metropolitan Planning Council. I mean, they've talked about $43 billion in needs, and that's basically to bring the system up to par that we haven't had, you know, trying to get us back up where we should be in terms of maybe where we were under the days of, hey, some of the great deal makers, you know, and that's what they were, you know, the guys, you know, the Jim Thompsons, the George Ryans, who put together these big deals that really, you know, helped put together these grand plans that we have in place right now.
Well, and if there is going to be a capital plan, and we talked to Marty Luby this right. morning about mm-hmm. bonds and that kind of thing, is that normally there has to be a dedicated revenue source, either, and he mentioned that video poker was one for the last capital program, and there were questions even then about whether video poker was going to generate enough revenue, and, you know, were they going to have to siphon off money from general revenue to pay for it. But, you know, if there is room in the gas tax, which appears to be probably the most efficient way right now, yeah. you take that and throw it with the lockbox amendment and be able to take advantage of these low interest rates to be able to leverage something.
And that would be the secret combination. I mean, the fact is that that constitutional amendment, you know, has a lot of teeth to it. And, you know, if you can say, hey, we know we're going to get $500 million a year in extra transportation funding, you know, that's monumental. Maybe tie it to, you know, a motor fuel tax increase, and people complain about it, but again, it's a user fee. It's based on how much you drive. If you drive more, you buy more fuel, then you're gonna pay the motor fuel tax. But unless you really, you know, think about it, motor fuel tax is off the table right now, and lockbox, I think, has a good chance of passing in November. It needs, you know, 60% of those voting to vote for it in November.
But it also seems like everything other than that, everything is off the table right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and again, that's why the state, you know, when they put together their long-range plan, it's a minimal plan. It does not include major work. You know, no major projects that are listed in there anymore because they're limping along. And they're a victim of what's been happening probably the last 6-7 years in terms of capital funding.
Well, we were able to do road work this up until July 1st
sure.
because that was one part of the budget that did get signed.
That's right. And between court orders and everything else, we were able to have a road program that we were able to at least keep going this year. But right now we're sitting here, you know, we got 2 weeks left in the fiscal year, and there are no indications of any, you know, stopgap budget, and that's what it's going to take to get us at least keep moving after July 1.
Well, and it seems like everybody's focus, too, has been on schools and education as being a pressure point.
Sure.
But does anybody understand that this also is a pressure point?
Well, you know, and that's very delicate because of the fact people say, where's our priorities? And you want to be able to say, you know, our priorities, of course, are taking care of the kids and taking care of those people with special needs. But transportation, you know, is the lifeblood of the state of Illinois, and with transportation and infrastructure, you generate the tax revenue you need to fund those things.
I mean, it's as I said, it's another sign of just this crumbling state of the state.
Dysfunctionality.
And I know that the Rauner administration, for their part, that they have spoken about this issue, too, about the need to keep a transportation program going. And as much as you touched on, you know, what are our priorities, and yes, we've talked so much about the safety net programs that are just collapsing underneath us. As you said, you know, if you have to kind of dismantle a construction project on July 1, you're going to be spending so much more money in the end to have to go back in and restart a project.
Sure, it's not easy. And that's not easy because it's mechanical, it's, you know, manpower, all of that. And you just can't walk away, like you said, from a job. And that's, there's thousands of them around the state.
It's another sign of the state that we live in. That's amazing. Don Schaefer, Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning and joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio.
Glad to be here, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Martin Luby, Assistant Professor from the School of Public Service at DePaul University, Brian Bernadoni with the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Don Schaefer, Executive Vice President of the Midwest Truckers Association. But most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening, and enjoy this happy, happy Father's Day. Now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
You couldn't have a nicer day for Father's Day for you today.
This is the grill is going to get fired up.
Are you grilling? Because it seems like you should be grilled for today.
I'm grilling.
But you prefer it that way, don't you?
Well, yeah. Yes. Well, it's the control freak in me, I
guess.
Oh,
that's nice.
No,
and there's the true essence of Father's Day.
Isn't that what a father's all about?
I think we've gotten to the core of that pretty quickly. Happy Father's Day to you, Rick.